For the past few months, we have been going through the Sermon on the Mount, starting in Matthew chapter 5. It's a very interesting study that Jesus here is beginning to create his new kingdom law. And so he is speaking to a group of Jews, I suppose, those who follow the law of Moses. And a lot of the things that he is teaching is very different from what they had heard. And so we get to this part here in Matthew chapter 5 where he begins to talk about the writing of divorce notes. Now, this is a subject that I suppose not too many people want to talk about. I guarantee you I don't. But at the same time, I look out and I know I have a lot of young folks that live in my house. And it's important that we know what the Bible teaches about divorce. If we were to walk around the streets of St. Angel, or Mason, or Midland, or Denver, or wherever, I bet we'd get a bunch of different responses if we started asking about, well, who can be divorced? Who can be married? Who can? And all those questions that come up, and most of them probably don't have a lot of biblical fact or a lot of biblical knowledge to them. At the same time, this concept of the writing of a divorcement has caused so much heartache over the years. Not only in throughout the world, but in the Lord's church itself, the question of marriage and divorce and remarriage, it's been something that's been hashed over. And I don't know that there's an easy way to discuss it. But for this morning, what I would like to do as best as possible is we're going to look at the concept of the writing of divorcement in light of Jesus' teachings on the Sermon on the Mount. It comes from Matthew chapter 5, verses 31 through 32. Furthermore, it has been said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you that whoever divorces his wife for any reason except sexual immorality causes her to commit adultery. And whoever marries a woman who is divorced commits adultery. That is not what the Kardashians are going to tell you about divorce. That is not what Hollywood is going to tell you about divorce. In fact, that's not what it's about anyone's going to tell you about divorce. But that's what the Bible says. That's the teachings of Jesus. So as we go through this question, this lesson this morning, I have a couple questions I would like to follow through. Number one, who is meant by the word whoever in Matthew 5 and 31? Number two, was fornication a cause for an Old Testament divorce? Because divorce was allowed under the law of Moses. Was an unfaithful spouse a reason for divorce under Old Testament law? It's better. Number three, what Old Testament laws dealt with the innocent party and remarriage? A spouse who had been cheated on, or some act of unfaithfulness. What laws dealt with the innocent party and their future remarriage? Number four, why was divorce allowed under the Old Testament? Number five, what is meant by the phrase, but I say to you? Number six, what is the New Testament general rule for divorce? And finally, number seven, is there any exception to this rule? I want to tell you, this is a very controversial subject. And I don't intend at all to try to step on any toes. I don't intend at all to say that I'm calling anybody out or anything like that. It's just my desire that we teach what the Bible teaches. And I know there's different beliefs. And I know there's different camps that people have set up in over the years. And so I'll do my best, not in any way to attempt to discourage or to speak differently. I'm just going to try to teach what the Bible has to say. And hopefully we have questions and open up lines of dialogue rather than build walls of distrust. I want to tell you this is a very serious issue. I'm going to give you two verses. I want you to think about this. First one is 1 Timothy chapter 4, verses 1 and 3. It's an interesting verse. Verse 1 says, now the Spirit expressly says that in the latter times some will depart from the faith, giving heed to deceiving spirits and doctrines of demons. He goes on to list several things that are classified as doctrines of demons. One of which, in verse 3, is forbidding to marry. That's serious. And so if we're teaching that people are not allowed to be married, he calls that a doctrine of demons when we forbid people to marry. Now this is serious. But then you look at Matthew 19 and 6, what God has joined together, Jesus says, let not man separate. So now we're talking about trying to break up marriages. He says, don't do it. Don't break up what God has brought together. And so then you sit there with these two almost conflicting viewpoints here. I just want you to know that this is a serious, serious issue. The concept of marriage is used to define or to describe the relationship between Jesus Christ and His church. This is a serious, serious issue. I'm going to give you this little warning here. Whatever truth the church does not teach, the world will replace with lies. And so if there's a topic that's controversial and we decide, well, let's just kind of skirt around that one and we won't address it, somebody will. And it's going to be the world, and there's no telling what they're going to say. And so even though this might be a complicated subject, even though it might be one that somewhat difficult for some to hear and some to teach, it's something that we have to do. And so we have to teach. Because whatever truth the church does not teach, the world will replace with lies. And so we're going to try to get through this as best as possible and teach what the Bible has to say about this writing of divorcement in relationship to the Sermon on the Mount. Before we go further, though, let's take opportunity to go to God. Matthew 5 and 31, the Bible reads, "Furthermore, it has been said, whosoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce." So when Jesus says, "it has been said," of course, what he's referring back to is the old law of Moses. And so we've kind of discussed the last couple of weeks, kind of interesting, this idea of it is written or it is said. When he's speaking to illiterate people, the common folk, he'll have a tendency, Jesus will say, "well, as you have heard," because they probably technically had never read it, the written word. When he's speaking in the synagogues, he'll say, "is it not written?" Because he was speaking to more educated people, and there were actual copies of the law of Moses there, and they had actually read the written word. But Jesus now says, "it has been said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce." This goes back to Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse 1. I just took the first verse. It's actually the beginning of a rather long discourse. When a man takes a wife and marries her, and it happens that she finds no favor in his eyes because of some uncleanness in her, and he writes her a certificate of divorce, puts it in her hand, and sends her out of his house. And he begins to teach this particular discourse. But there was such a thing as divorce under the law of Moses. And when a woman had a certificate of divorcement in her hand, she was then free to remarry. And we're going to talk about that here in a little bit. Question number one is, who is meant by the word whoever? When Jesus says, whoever, whosoever here, let me read it one more time, whoever divorces his wife, who does he mean by that term, whoever? Who is he referencing? And I believe the command that Jesus was referencing from Deuteronomy 24 and 1 was referring only to the Jews, or physical Israel. The other nations, the round about, the Amorites and the Amalekites, for example, they were not held accountable to God's commands of the law of Moses, because they were not part of the covenant. In Deuteronomy 5, verses 2 and 3, the Bible says, "the Lord our God made a covenant with us in Horeb. The Lord did not make this covenant with our fathers, but with us, those who are here today, all of us that are alive." And so there was a covenant relationship. And because of that covenant, he's only speaking to the Jews about this concept of the idea of the certificate of divorcement. So keep that in mind, because I believe that's going to become important later in study, that the original, whoever, was the nation of Israel. It was the Jews, those that were under the law of Moses. Question number two. Was fornication, or some type of illicit sexual activity, was that a reason or a cause for divorce under the law of Moses? Was that a reason or a cause for Old Testament divorce? And surprisingly to some, the answer is no. That was not a reason to be divorced under the law of Moses. Fornication between unmarried, you know what happened for your call in the act of fornication between unmarried people? Well, it was either marriage, kind of like the old shotgun marriage that we hear about nowadays. I guess that's kind of where it came from. You either had to be married, or there would be a fine or a penalty that you would have to pay to the woman's family. Let me give you a couple examples of that. Deuteronomy 22. Deuteronomy 22, 23, 24, all of that area has a lot to do with the rules of marriage. Deuteronomy 22, verse 28 says, "If a man finds a young woman who is a virgin, who is not betrothed or is not engaged," and keep in mind, back in those days, engaged, marriage, is basically the same thing. There was not a, the rules that went for marriage also went to one who was betrothed or who was engaged. It says, this young man seizes her and lies with her, and they are found out. Then the man who lay with her shall give to the young woman's father 50 shekels of silver, and she shall be his wife because he has humbled her. He shall not be permitted to divorce her all his days. See, actually, fornication was actually a reason why they could not divorce. That under the Old Testament law, between two unmarried people now they would have to get married, and they would not be permitted to be divorced for entire life. Exodus 22 and 16, if a man entices a virgin who is not betrothed and lies with her, he shall surely pay the bride price for her to be his wife. And if her father utterly refuses to give her to him, he shall pay money according to the bride price of virgins. In other words, he had to pay a penalty. He had to pay a fine because of the actions. If the father flat out refused to allow the daughter to be married, then the man was responsible then for paying a penalty fee because of the actions. And it wasn't a situation that caused for divorce. What about if the two were married? Would unfaithfulness between two partners, is that a reason for divorce under the law of Moses? And the answer is no. Because under the law of Moses, it was death. The penalty was death for unfaithfulness. There was no divorce because of fornication. Deuteronomy 22 and 22. If a man is found lying with a woman married to a husband, so we have a case of adultery here, then both of them shall die. The man that lay with the woman and the woman, so he shall put away the evil from Israel. Now I think a lot of folks in the world would be real surprised to know that that's what the law of Moses taught. That if you were caught in any type of adulterous situation, both parties were to be executed. They were to be stoned to death there by the folks. Goes on to say, verse 23, if a young woman who is a virgin is betrothed to her husband, and a man finds her in the city and lies with her, then he shall bring them both out of the gate of the city, and he shall stone them to death with stones. The young woman because she did not cry out in the city, and the man because he humbled his neighbor's wife. So ye shall put away the evil from among you. So under the law of Moses, if there was some type of an affair going on, both were to be executed outside the city gates. Notice this split, though, about being inside the city. Sounds a little bit strange. I think the idea behind this is if the woman was in the city, she would have the opportunity to cry out, help me, I'm being raped, help me, whatever the situation. And there would be folks around, there would be people that would be able to assist her. Because we get to verse 25, we get kind of another scenario. It says, but if a man finds a betrothed young woman in the countryside, and the man forces her and lies with her, then only the man who lay with her shall die. So it seems as though now the law of Moses was giving the woman the benefit of the doubt. That if she was out there in the middle of the woods and her cries and her screams would have been unheeded, it was an opportunity to say she did all that she could do. Verse 26, but you shall do nothing to the young woman. There is in the young woman no sin deserving of death. For just as when a man rises up against his neighbor and kills him, even so is this matter. So the law of Moses equates this situation to like a situation of murder where one man murders an innocent man, murders his neighbor. He says the same thing. This woman, she did all that she could do, and so the benefit of the doubt was given under her. Verse 27, for he found her in the countryside, and the betrothed young woman cried out, but there was no one to save her. Pretty serious situation, wasn't it? That's what the law of Moses taught about fornication. So fornication was not a cause for divorce under the law of Moses because its penalty was already death. Question number three. What Old Testament laws dealt with the innocent party and remarriage? This was Megan's question. Now I had to think about it for a little bit because I couldn't give her a real good answer. And then suddenly it kind of came to me. I don't know of any laws. I don't know of any Old Testament commands that deal with an innocent party and remarriage. Because under the law of adultery in the Old Testament, the innocent party would be considered a widow. Because if the penalty was death, the spouse would have been executed if the law was followed out. So I don't guess there would be a guilty party or an innocent party under the Old Testament law because you would just be a widow or a widower. Because the penalty was death. And so you wouldn't have to have any special types of rules. You would be allowed to marry, just like a widow or a widower would be allowed to remarry. That's the best answer I can give to that question, because that's one I was not sure of. But it's a different situation under the Old Testament. So if fornication was not a reason for divorce under the Old Testament, why was divorce allowed at all? Jesus says in Matthew 19 and 8, speaking to the Jews, he said to them, Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, permitted you to divorce your wives. But from the beginning, it was not so. Why about this really aggravating? I want you to think about what's happening now. In Matthew chapter 5 is the idea of the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus is just beginning his teaching. And so what he's doing in Matthew chapter 5 in the Sermon on the Mount, he keeps going back to the law of Moses. And he says, but you have heard, this is what the law of Moses says, but this is what I say unto you. And he begins to alter it. In Matthew 19 and 8, towards the end, he goes all the way back to the beginning. He even skips the law of Moses. And he says, listen, there's a law that predates the law of Moses. And he says, from the beginning, it was not so. This is not what God wanted. God permitted it. Kind of like he permitted the people to have a king. It's not what he wanted. He permitted the people to have a king. But he says, because of the hardness of your heart, God is going to permit divorce under the law of Moses. So why was divorce allowed under the Old Testament? I found about six reasons. And notice fornication is not any of them. Exodus 21 and 7 says that she did not please her master. I don't know what that means. Exodus 21, 7. And if a man sells his daughter to be a female slave, she shall not go out as a male slave. But if she does not please her master, who has betrothed her to himself, then he shall let her be redeemed. I don't really know what that means when it says, pleases not the master. I don't know what the technical rules of that imply. But it says that if you married a female slave and she did not please you, something tells me that might have something to do with being able to bear children. And I don't know if that's technically or if there's more to it or less to it. I don't know. But it says if you does not please her master, then she could be redeemed. That means someone else could come by her and take her as a wife. That she could be redeemed. Number two, he no longer wants to provide. This is really sad to me, this part right here. In Exodus chapter 21, verses 10 to 11, listen to what the law says. If he takes another wife, he shall not diminish her food, her clothing, and her marriage rights. And if he does not do these three for her, then she shall go out free without paying money. It almost sounds like an animal, doesn't it? Under the Old Testament law. Doesn't it almost sound like an animal? It's saying if you have a man, he's got this slave who's become betrothed and become his wife. He said, if you don't do these three things, then you just send her free. If you won't provide for her food, that just sounds terrible. I mean, she won't make sure they won't let her eat. If you don't provide her clothing, that sounds terrible. Just food and shelter. And thirdly, it says, and for marriage rights. I'm guessing this is what the Apostle Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians 7. It says that the husband is supposed to show due affection to his wife, and the wife due affection to the husband. I'm guessing that is in a physical relationship is what that means. And it says, look, if a man won't do those three things, won't provide food and water, and won't provide clothing and some type of physical affection, then she could be let go free. That just sounds so terrible how the law was tilted against women in those days. So when Jesus begins to teach, it's really going to change their opinion, I think. Number three, Deuteronomy 21 and 14 says, if a husband does no longer delight in his wife. Again, I don't know exactly what that means. Some of the commentators think that is, again, talking about not being able to bear children. Deuteronomy 21 and 14. And it says, and it shall be, if you have no delight in her, then you shall set her free. But you certainly shall not sell her for money. But the wife would be let go free. She'd be divorced. Deuteronomy 24 and 1, which you've already alluded to, speaks about some type of uncleanness. Again, I don't know what uncleanness means. That could mean a whole bunch of different things. I guess up to unfaithfulness or up to adultery, which would have been the penalty of death. But in Deuteronomy 24 and 1, it says, when a man takes a wife and marries her, and it happens that she finds no favor in his eyes because she has found some uncleanness in her, and he writes her a certificate of divorce, puts it in her hand, and sends her out of his house. When she has departed from his house and goes and becomes another man's wife, if the latter husband detests her and writes her a certificate of divorce, puts it in her hand, and sends her out of his house, or if the latter husband dies, who took her as his wife, that her former husband who divorced her must not take her back to be his wife after she has been defiled. She was not allowed to remarry the first husband. Number 5, Deuteronomy 24, we just read verse 3 and 4, the husband detests the wife. That would be a cause for divorce. And finally, number 6, Ezra, chapter 10, talks about a wife or a spouse being a heathen. And so they were told to get rid of those foreign heathen wives in the book of Ezra. Again, fornication was not a reason. That was not an Old Testament reason for divorce. But Jesus says, you know, but from the beginning, it was not so. That is not how God had designed marriage. But that's what had happened over the course of time. And because of the hardness of their hearts, the law of Moses had to have been modified to allow reasons for divorce. Now, I found something interesting. Did you know there was an Old Testament exception to marriage? Did you know that a woman who had this bill of divorcement, we just read here in Deuteronomy how the one husband found some uncleanness in her, and so she went off, and it says she married a second husband. See, there was no problem with that. She had a writing of divorcement, a bill of divorcement. She was free to marry just about anyone. But do you know there was an exception? It's found in Leviticus, the 21st chapter, verse 7. A divorced woman could not be married to a priest. So there was an exception. A priest could marry anyone except a prostitute, a heathen, or a divorced woman. And so I suppose a divorced woman then could marry anyone except a priest, as best I can tell. Matthew 5 and 32. Now here's where Jesus says, "But I say to you that whoever divorces his wife for any reason except sexual immorality causes her to commit adultery. And whoever marries a woman who is divorced commits adultery." So again, I'm asking the same question. Who is meant by the word whoever? So earlier he says, you have heard that whoever divorces his wife, and it was talking to the Jews. Well, who are we talking to now? And now Jesus began to reiterate or to begin his kingdom law. And so I believe this word whoever in verse 32, just like whoever in verse 31 referred to those under the law of Moses or the Jews, this is the law that's now going to refer to those under the law of Christ, to the Christians. And so we have a break. We have this old law and this new law. And I'm telling you, that concept causes more problems in the world today. Not being able, as I heard Royce pray this morning, to rightly divide the word. And that's so important that we understand that. Question 5. What is meant by the phrase when Jesus says, "But I say to you"? Well, as with the rest of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus was proclaiming his authority, and he was establishing his kingdom law. Remember how at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, it said everybody just kind of stood back and went, whew. It says they were astonished at his teaching, because he's taught as one who had authority. He wasn't quoting scriptures. He was not like the scribes. He was not quoting from the authority of the Old Testament, but rather, he was quoting from his own authority. He's establishing his kingdom law. So when Jesus says, "But I say to you," he was going to teach them something that was very different from the law of Moses. Something new is coming. Those laws that we just talked about, those 6 reasons for divorce, the different situations of the Old Testament divorce, something was going to change. Because he says, "But now I say to you," something is about to happen. Don't forget, Jesus, his plan was to fulfill the old law. It was not to destroy it, but it was to fulfill it. And that's such an important thing to remember as we study through the Sermon on the Mount. So what is Jesus teaching? Well, there's several of them. In verse 22 of Matthew chapter 5, he says, "You have heard," in other words, the Old Testament, "that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not murder.' And whoever murders will be in danger of the judgment." That's what the law of Moses said. You know what Jesus said? "But I say to you that whoever is angry with his brother without cause shall be in danger of judgment." See, Jesus really, he twisted up. He says it's not just the act of murder. It's the intent of anger in your heart. He goes on to say in verse 27, he's talking about adultery. "You have heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not commit adultery.'" The act of adultery was sinful. "But I say to you," Jesus is going to change it now. He says that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. See how Jesus changed from what the old law said to what the new law says? It's getting serious. What about the idea of divorce? Verse 32 as we're reading. Verse 31, "Furthermore, it's been said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce." That's the law of Moses. But now Jesus says, "But I say to you that whoever divorces his wife for any reason except sexual immorality causes her to commit adultery." Well, that's not the old law, is it? The old law said that you could be divorced for several different reasons. And Jesus says, no, there's one reason. Fornication was not one of the reasons that was a permissible reason for divorce. But now Jesus says it is. Women were treated like possessions. They were treated like cattle under the Old Testament. And Jesus, that's not the way it's going to be anymore. There's going to be rights that are given to protect them. I see a very, very clear that Jesus is comparing the old law to his new laws of teaching. What about oaths in verse 33? "Again, you have heard that it was said to those of old," Old Testament, "you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform your oaths to the Lord. But I say to you, do not swear at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, nor by Jerusalem, for it is the city of his great king, nor shall you swear by your head." He said, I don't want you to swear at all. So he took that Old Testament law, and it was tweaked just a little bit. What about the law of retaliation? Verse 38, "You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth." Where'd that come from? That's the law of Moses. But Jesus says, "But I tell you not to resist an evil person. Whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other one to him also." So Jesus has changed the rules. And finally, what about the idea of enemies? In verse 43, "But you have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you," so no longer the old law, it's changing now, "love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you." And Jesus was changing. He was altering these laws. And the people sitting in the crowd were just amazed. Because he wasn't quoting Jeremiah. He wasn't quoting the prophets. He was not quoting the scriptures and the way that the old scribes had done. He was speaking as one who had authority. Now do you see why so many people got mad at Jesus and wanted him dead? They thought he was a blasphemer. Because he was speaking as though he had the authority of God. Which, of course, he did. And so Jesus could alter whatever law that he wanted to. So number six, what is the New Testament general rule for divorce? I'm going to tell you this right now. God hates divorce. God hates divorce. I hate divorce. I'd assume if we took a poll, we 100% hate divorce. Divorce is so destructive. It has destroyed our country. Over half of all marriages now in our country end in divorce. As a school teacher, I see it every day, the impact of what divorce has done to families and to children, and it's heartbreaking. We hate divorce. This is our general rule. Luke 16 and 18, "Whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery. Whoever marries her who is divorced from her husband commits adultery." That's our general rule. But did Jesus allow an exception to that? But that's the words of Jesus speaking in Luke chapter 16. He says, "Everyone who divorces and remarries commits adultery." And the second part, "Anyone who marries a divorced person commits adultery." That is the general rule that the New Testament gives. But just as though there were exceptions in the Old Testament concerning divorce, the question has to be raised, did Jesus allow an exception to this rule? Question number seven, is there an exception? It sure seems that's what Jesus is teaching in these two passages. This is not the general rule, but rather it's the exception. Matthew 5 and 32, "But I say to you that whoever divorces his wife for any reason except sexual immorality causes her to commit adultery." Matthew 19 and 9, "And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife, except for sexual immorality, and marries another, commits adultery." You know how many problems we could solve in the religious world if these two verses weren't around? But they are. And that's what the Bible teaches. And so, yes, it sure appears that Jesus allowed a situation for an exception, just like there was an exception under the Old Testament law. That being said, we now have what are called exception versus non-exception. Unfortunately, this question has been debated for years and years and has been responsible for much heartache in the Lord's church. After my grandfather passed, Grandma gave me a bunch of his old sermons, a bunch of his old writings, a bunch of letters that he'd written. I saw the pain in some of those letters that he had written because of this question of marriage and divorce and remarriage, exception versus non-exception. Some of the most influential people in my life, spiritually speaking, have different opinions on what this means. Is there an exception or is there a non-exception? And I can't tell you how much heartache this question has caused. What we've looked at this morning is what the Bible says. And so does the Bible teach that there's an exception? I believe that it does. And I believe just like there's an exception in the Old Testament law, I believe there's an exception in the New Testament law. We must do our due diligence to make sure we understand what the Bible says, what the Bible teaches, and don't let personal feelings and personal opinions get involved, because it's just so easy to do. We're human. It's human nature. We need to be aware of the feelings of all our brothers, but there's differences of opinion. And we've got to try to do the best we can to sort out these issues and only speak in love and not speak of anything that purposely tries to set people apart. We're all in this together. Let me say, thirdly, marriage is very important to God. Marriage is of extreme importance. As I said earlier, there's an example in the New Testament that talks about how Jesus and his relationship with the church, he calls it the bride of Christ. And I can also think in the Old Testament about how God put away Israel. God divorced Israel. And this is a serious, serious situation when you begin to place that type of spiritual understanding on the concept of marriage and divorce. Study it. Learn it. You may not agree with what I'm saying, but still study it. Whatever we do, we need to make sure that we believe what the Bible teaches and know what the Bible teaches. Work through the differences that we might have, but don't go turn on Kardashians. I always use that as an example. Don't go turn on the Kardashians to figure out how we're supposed to handle marriage and divorce. Because if we do, we're going to be taken down the path. Whatever truth the Bible does not teach, the world will fill with lies. Guaranteed, I promise you that. When in doubt, what do we do? Well, I'm going to give you this verse. I think this is probably the same thing that Paul had been asked. 1 Corinthians 7, verses 10-12. He says, "Now to the married I command, yet not I but the Lord. A wife is not to depart from her husband. But even if she does depart, let her remain unmarried or be reconciled to her husband. And a husband is not to divorce his wife. But to the rest, I, not the Lord, say, if any brother has a wife who does not believe, and she is willing to live with him, let him not divorce her." God hates divorce. We need to be careful of the situations that we get ourselves into. So I'm glad we've got so many young folks in the building this morning. Trust me, this is not a subject I would like to talk about. I'd rather talk about one of those subjects, kind of like on the Andy Griffith Show one time, where old Barney fell asleep during the sermon. And all he could remember, that it was about sin. That's all he could say. Oh, it was a great sermon about sin. Sometimes it'd be nice just to talk about sin without having to be quite as controversial. But this is so important that we understand and know what the Bible teaches. I'm going to close with this thought, though. I want to choose words very carefully. I want to choose labels very carefully. Because as you read and you begin to study, there's different camps that have broken up all over, not only in the world and in the religious world, but in the Church of Christ itself. There are many different people that believe different things, and they have really honed in and picked up on their concept, and this is what we are and this is what we aren't. I want to be careful of labels. In fact, there's two labels that I choose not to use. This is a personal nature. One, I was reading from the viewpoint of a man who was a no-exception preacher. And I respect his opinion. The one thing I did not like about it, do you know what he called those that believe in an exception? Pro-divorce. He said, "You're a pro-divorce if you don't believe in an exception." And that really is me. I'm not pro-divorce. I hate divorce. The Lord hates divorce. God hates divorce. How in the world could you say something that pro-divorce? That is not the way to handle things. You know, that's what we do in the politics. You know, we like to kind of be condescending towards the side that doesn't agree with us, and we'll give them little names and little labels to kind of make them look less in the eyes, and pro-life and pro-choice and all this kind of thing. We'll try to assign labels that make them look less than what they are. If you believe in an exception, because it's taught in Matthew 5 and 32, I don't believe you're pro-divorce. And I believe that's a term that's very dangerous, because it's very condescending, and I didn't appreciate that. And I got thinking about number two. We like to use the word digressive sometimes in the church. I don't like that word. I don't like that label. And that's one I'm not going to use because that seems to be very degrading. Digressive. And I know I've heard preachers say that and I've heard people use that. Those that have digressed from the truth. Hey, whatever it is, let's call it what it is. But I don't really like that term. Because when you start putting up walls instead of opening up avenues for discussion, you're never going to get very far with anybody. And little disagreements that could be discussed and could be handled in a proper way, you start building walls like that. If I had met the fellow that said I was pro-divorce, I probably wouldn't listen too much to what he had to say. And so I think we need to be careful of that and aware of that. When we go out of our way to be combative, or we go out of our way to be condescending, the cause of the gospel, I believe, is not fervent. I believe it's hindered. Because now groups pull back, and they won't talk about anything anymore. And they won't discuss it, and they don't debate it, and they don't talk about difference of opinion and try to work their way through it. Everybody just pulls back and does their own thing. And I'm afraid we have hindered the cause of the gospel rather than fervent. So in conclusion, the law of Moses allowed for many reasons for divorce, but fornication was not one. Those six that I could find. Brother George Batty says it like this, oversimplifies it, but he says the Old Testament allowed for many wives and many reasons for divorce. The law of Christ allows for one wife and one reason for divorce. That's how George Batty summarizes it. Number two, when Jesus said, "But I say to you," he was instituting new law for a new kingdom. He would take something from the old law, the law of Moses. He might accept it. He might alter it, or he might completely reject it. The examples we saw today, he took the old law and altered it to fit his new kingdom. Thirdly, only the Jews were under the law of Moses, and they were only people responsible to follow the marriage laws laid out in Deuteronomy. Likewise, only Christians are under the law of Christ. And that's important as the study goes on. And finally, whatever a Christian believes on the subject of divorce and remarriage, we should treat each other with great love and respect as we try to study and we try to further the gospel rather than hinder it because of our personal beliefs. Conclusion remarks I have for this morning, I'll leave the lesson with you.